got so much to cover, I think I'm going to go ahead and get started. And then as folks, you know, finish dropping off the kids and come on, and I'll kind of go slow with the announcements because that's the first part anyway. It's good to be with you guys this morning. Thanks for coming to our Growing Healthy Marriages class. And about half of the class, I'm going to be covering Chapter 8 in this book we've been using. And the title of it is The Closeness You Want. And I'm going to be doing that and also telling you about some things that I have learned in my counseling practice as well, kind of combining those two things. And then the other half of the class, I'm really looking forward to getting to interview Anna and Brandon. They agreed to the interview, and I gave them the list of questions and everything. No surprise questions for them. And looking forward to that, because they are very special and unique, and they bring a lot to the table and to our church family. And guys, I'm teasing when I was talking about that, but I'm very appreciative of the willingness to. Now, also to update you on our schedule, next week we will not meet. It's November the 30th, and we're going to take a Thanksgiving break. Alright? And then, the very first Sunday in December, December 7th, Eddie's going to be teaching class. I'm really looking forward to that. And then on December 14th, we are going to have a panel discussion, and the people on the team will be the panel members. And that will be our last class. Okay, we're going to wrap up with that panel discussion. And originally we had planned to close on the 21st, but we're going to be able to wrap it up on the 14th. And you know how we've got families coming in and for Christmas and people leaving and traveling and going elsewhere for Christmas and breaks. So we're going to be able to wrap it up on the 14th. Now, any questions about the schedule or what to expect for the remainder of the semester? To me, it's been a fun semester. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope it's been a learning experience for you and at the same time enjoyable as well. But it's gone by as time does, as it would have gone by quickly. Now, the chapter entitled The Closeness You Want. When I think of marriage and closeness, I think of Genesis 2:24. It's just my go-to, where my head goes. And you guys could quote that, you know, for me, you know. That is why a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh. Now, a Genesis 2:24 couple is, number one, designed by God to be the closest human relationship possible for couples experience spiritual, emotional, and physical intimacy through marriage. And on the very first page of chapter 8 in this book, the Gregoires write about a love story. And I would add that the love story that they write about, that couple in that love story is a Genesis 2:24 couple. And by that I mean it's much more than saying I do. You know how long it takes to say I do? Pretty quickly. But truly, a Genesis 2:24 couple. Because you see, this is what they say on that very first page. The longest marriage of a United States president ended in 2023 when Rosalynn Carter passed away at the age of 96 years old. At that time, former President Jimmy Carter and his wife Rosalynn had been married 77 years. Wow. At her passing, Jimmy Carter was not in good health. He was unable to talk and he was in a wheelchair. Yet he insisted on attending her funeral. Amy Lynn, their daughter, read a letter at the funeral that her father had written to her mother 75 years earlier while he was serving in the Navy. And it went like this. My darling, every time I have ever been away from you, I have been thrilled when I return to discover just how wonderful you are. While I am away, I try to actually convince myself that you really are not and could not be as sweet and beautiful as I recall. But when I see you, I fall in love with you all over again. The Gregoires write, isn't that what we want to feel the joy of discovery when we see our spouse, that spark of deep knowing. Know you pretty well. Deep longing and deep loving. They continue by pointing out that closeness means you see all of someone, adding you know what makes them tick. You know their fears as well as their dreams. They stated it so well when they wrote, it's the difference between knowing about someone and knowing someone, between understanding someone's emotional state and actually entering into it with them. Doing that, you see, requires vulnerability. Continuing, they point out that it takes courage to share what's on your heart, and it also means that we need to make it safe to do so. In their book, the Gregoires make reference to John Powell and the book he wrote entitled, Why Am I Afraid to Tell You Who I Am? Powell shared that there are 5 levels of communication, and I put those levels on the board. The first one is surface talk, and he gives an example of what that might sound like. What a long day. The next level, facts. I'm going to be late tomorrow because of a meeting at work. That's just a fact. Okay? The third level, opinions. My boss calls too many meetings. And the fourth one goes deeper at the feelings level. I'm starting to dread going to work on days my boss is there because she always asks things at the last minute which are impossible to get done in time. And vulnerability, the deepest level, that's about our fears and dreams. An example of that might sound like this. I worry that technology is moving so fast that I'm not going to be able to do this job well for very much longer. I might become obsolete. I wish I had chosen a different path about a decade ago. This seems like a dead end. Is it surprising that many marriages stall on levels 2 and 3 at the facts and opinion level? Probably not. If couples fail to communicate at the feelings level or deeper, the marriage can actually feel like something's missing, that we know we're not as close as we could be, and something's just missing, something not quite there. They write bluntly that if you want to have the best marriage you can, you have to open up and share. And I want to say that again, that you have to open up and share. But why is it so hard to do so? Why is it so hard to open up? A marriage that remains at the fact and opinion level, levels 2 and 3, you see, may actually end up feeling safe, since opening up to your spouse requires you to confront things about yourself that you might not even want to look at. Confronting our baggage. Okay. If you notice when you walk in, and they're tipped over, me. Okay. Confronting our baggage can be hard. As you can see, I have baggage with me, and normally our baggage is invisible, right, to others. But for our purpose, I want to use these pieces of luggage to represent a couple's baggage that they bring into their marriage. And this is not about me personally, and it's not about Bruce either, nor is it limited to a particular age or a length of time a couple has been married. This baggage just represents a couple's past that happens to be unprocessed. And that's the key word, that what's in this baggage is unprocessed. Got it? Right? That means that what's inside this baggage has been deliberately stuffed or buried with the hope that time will heal. You ever heard that phrase? Well, I just won't talk about it. I won't deal with it. Time will take care of it. Wouldn't that be nice? And then it will just go away. If only that were true, that would be wonderful. However, we all know it doesn't go away. You see, it's very possible for both spouses to have baggage in different sizes, depending on what they have experienced in the past. Now, if I could have, I would have parked an 18-wheeler out in the parking lot, because it can come in that size, too, depending on what kind of trauma somebody maybe has been through. Somehow I just couldn't, you know, get that 18-wheeler out of there, so we'll just have to imagine that. And it's also very possible to experience distance in a marriage without realizing the harm that this baggage is doing to the relationship. Right? Now, I'm going to unzip this bag and tell you what's in it. But before I do that, I want you guys to tell me, what do you think could be inside this bag? Shame, yes. What else?
Your parents?
Yeah, that might be tight and sweet, but yeah. Right. And that you kind of keep them around with you. What else could be in this baggage?
Fear.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
Past trauma or abuse.
Abuse? Like what, Annie?
Parental or school, somebody hurt you physically, etc.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What else could be in the baggage? Yes, ma'am.
So good.
Yeah, I was looking around at church teachings.
Yeah, like what? What else?
I think it's kind of the opposite of a negative, but like overly positive experiences that then make you think that's what you go for.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Expectation? Mm-hmm. Okay, got some expectations because it went with, you know, I want that more of that. Yeah. Okay. Anything else that you can think of could be
core in beliefs? I think that kind of ties the current comment that those things develop into core beliefs about yourself or relationships or how you see others.
And what kind of core belief about yourself could be baggage that you're hauling around with?
Never good enough.
Oh, absolutely.
I would say the wrong thing.
I
know all about me.
I'm not enough. I hear that with great frequency. That's very common. And I never will be enough. I just can't measure up no matter what it is. Yeah. Anything else?
That
debt. Oh, yeah. Financial. Yeah. And what they might have experienced growing up and eating poverty. What about the kiddos that don't have a mom and dad? What are their income structures?
Abandonment.
Yeah. In the foster care system, there's just the age out of the foster care system. All kinds of stuff that could be made. Anything else come to mind? Yeah. Well, here's some possibilities, some of the ones that I want to list for you that could be in this baggage. Some of them you've already named. Abandonment, neglect, physical, emotional, or sexual abuse. Addiction, and there's a wide variety of those. And it could be addictions by a family member, or it could be the person, the spouse itself, if they struggled with some of that growing up, that could be your own issue. Secrets, anger, infidelity, okay? There are those who are like, on a second maybe marriage, they remarried because the first marriage ended, say, in divorce because somebody was unfaithful, and there can be scars and baggage from that that, you know, you fall into the next relationship and you haven't fully processed. So those are just some of the possibilities. Now, with unprocessed issues, what often remains is that we are left feeling that there's something deeply and fundamentally, inherently wrong with us. Just as Brandon was saying, no wonder there is a desire to stuff our feelings rather than facing them. No wonder we don't want to look at them. When a situation in the present occurs, it can trigger old, unprocessed, negative feelings. For example, in marriage, you know, it would help if the pages run out. There we go. The feelings that can even seem to be about the present, without a spouse even realizing they've been triggered by something that happened to him or her in the past. They can think they're working on something right now, and it can seem really big and intense, and they don't even realize that part of what is causing that intensity has been triggered from stuff that's never been processed, but they're experiencing it right now. If this plays out with frequency, it is at this point that spouses sometimes try to self-medicate in unhealthy ways to distract and ease the pain. If spouses remain stuck and experience distance in their relationship, it could be time to consult a professional therapist for assistance. Fortunately, right here in Colorado Springs, there are many Christian counselors trained to address and process a wide variety of topics. Ultimately, whether spouses are able to process their baggage on their own, independently, or with professional help, it has the potential to give spouses the freedom to part the baggage. Part the baggage. Okay. That doesn't mean spouses will forget what's in those bags. Okay? To be sure, they won't forget it. But what it does mean is they don't have to haul it around with them every day because they processed what was so hard to face. Does that make sense? When baggage is processed in part, spouses have an opportunity to experience that closeness we've been talking about that God designed for them as related in Genesis 2:24. If baggage is getting in your way, you know you have support available to you here at Eastside to begin making a change. Now, if you seem like, how can she have joy and be smiling and be talking about this stuff? It's because you don't have to stay stuck in it. Okay? There's a way out. You don't have to keep tripping over the baggage or hauling it around with you. And that's the joy in it, is that you can part it and be free of it. Finally, the Gregoires note that the message in many congregations is that marriage is just hard and God just wants you to stick it out no matter what. So some Christians decide not to divorce, but to just kind of tough it out. They end up living under the same roof and kind of have independent, separate lives. Our authors share a different take on this. Instead, they write, "We don't want you to stay in a marriage you hate. We want you to create a marriage you love, recognizing that life is hard and marriage is intended to make it easier." I would agree that marriage has been and will continue to be a work in progress, allowing for opportunities to grow as individuals and as a couple. The big question I want to ask you this morning is, are you a Genesis 2:24 couple? A couple who experiences spiritual, emotional, and physical intimacy, that closeness that God intended. We are blessed in our congregation to have elders, ministers, staff, and members who are dedicated to supporting you in this journey. Look around and notice how many team members have been here throughout this whole fall semester. Don't hesitate to reach out to any one of us if you have questions or concerns. We are on this journey together. And speaking of being on this journey together, the part I've really been looking forward to this morning is talking with Brandon and Laura. And they are special and unique in many ways, but one of the things that makes them a great resource is that they have both served in the military. So first and foremost, right off the bat, I want to tell you thank you for your service to the country. Okay. All right. And I think you guys can sit. You can see them, you can hear them, I think, and be just fine. And the recorder's going, you know, so I think that, you know, we'll be able to record it for anybody that knows that maybe a spouse wanted to come this morning and couldn't come. It will be available. Okay. All right. Also, I want to ask you to do this. The questions that I'm going to be asking them, I want you to kind of take a look at and figure out what level is that question. You're going to find maybe right off the bat the first one might be about facts, okay? But as we progress and I ask more questions of them, you're going to see the questions are going to be going deeper. Okay, so kind of try to figure out what level that question's at. All right, guys, here we roll. Please describe how you met and when and where you got married.
All right. So, well, I'll take this one. We met on a pistol range.
A pistol range. I have never heard of that.
Yeah, we always joked early on that our marriage was rock solid because we both knew we both could shoot. But we met again a couple months later. We just met briefly there. And then we met again a couple months later at our mutual friend's wedding. Quickly found after that we had this amazing faith background in common, which we avoided talking about for, the hours and hours on our first date. I said, I politics and religion, I don't want to get into that. I don't want to ruin it. I like this guy. And then, later found out we had this in common. That was a really sweet thing. We ended up getting married a year later. And I think the important thing about this is that we deployed right away. Rather, he'd already been deployed a little bit before we got married, and then 6 months into our marriage, he deployed, and I followed a month later. So most couples are spending their first year probably figuring out household tasks and things. We didn't spend our first year much together. We were I wanted to lead with this because I think this was really pivotal. My first assignment in Iraq. Well, you can tell me how I showed up, but my first assignment, I was assigned to a operations center in Iraq, and I very quickly learned to tell my radio operator, hey, I need you to let me know if Spectre 1 gets hit, because I don't want to find out my husband just got killed or wounded later on tonight, like, fuck up his unit or something else. I want you to tell me right away. And so my radio operator could tell me every time his unit got hit, which was probably a unique way for the start of marriage. Year one, hey, ma'am, Spectre just got hit. Okay, let me know, is it bad? anyway, he's all in one piece, and so we are here today 21 years later, but it was a wild way to start our marriage. It's just something a lot of people probably don't experience that, so we're a little weird. We have a lot to offer, but we're a little unique in that way.
Uh-huh. And I think that the immediate time away, so even before we got married, so we met in, say we started dating in June, January I deployed to Iraq. And so we had to overcome that communication hurdle early, mm-hmm. right? It was, but that time, AOL is the messenger, letters in the mail, that took forever. Right? So there was that communication hurdle that we had to overcome, even as a dating couple, whatever that looks like, and kind of run into it.
And where did y'all meet?
In Virginia, more or less. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then it was off to a walk. What a honeymoon.
They were bumpy.
Oh my goodness, guys! I have never, in all the years I have done marriage counseling, I have never met a couple that met at a pistol range. You know, that's a first. I'm going home with
that. He was on a pistol team for West Point, and they came down to a pistol clinic for the ROTC units there. There's a backstory that's also very funny.
Uh-huh. And what was that? Okay. All right. Here's question number two. Do y'all have any questions about what they just said for number one?
Were you both here to Christ?
Yep, we were. Yeah. So the funny thing, so my parents had offered, hey, if anyone needs to stay, like, all the groomsmen, none of them had made arrangements after this wedding of our friends. He knew the groom, I knew the bride, which is why they came down to UVA to do this pistol clinic in the first place back. It was pretty great. 2 months later at their wedding, we saw them. My parents said, hey, if they need a place to stay, they can come stay with us. Because I told them, I have this great guy, I don't know if he's going to do it. He's like, we got a guest room, whatever. We got couches. And so all of them bowed out, but he ended up staying the night. We talked for hours. And anyway, the next morning, we had, we were heading off to church, and he had to go take the favors back to Fort Eustis. But when he came back, he came back for lunch, and he saw our church directory sitting on the table. And he goes, right. It's Bayside Church of Christ in Virginia Beach. He goes, I go to that church. And I go, you don't go to Bayside. I would have met you by now. He goes, no, I go to the Church of Christ. And I was like, flabbergasted, getting in the kitchen there, like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, we avoided all talk of religion. I just, like, so my mom's standing there, and this, and in true theater fashion, she goes, well, are you instrumental? And Brandon goes,
that's a deal breaker.
Right? Like, this is 2003, right? So my mom goes, so she says that, and my Brandon goes, well, I played the guitar. Like, no, she came in church. And he goes, oh, no. And so, anyway, we joked that that was like the country moment, like, okay,
there you go. All right. You've got a check mark.
Yeah. So we grew up slightly different. Like, we grew up in a Dominican family, moving around lots of different congregations. We grew up with, like, going to the same church as his grandparents in a little town like Virginia. So it's different, but a lot. So it was just like, oh my goodness, of all the fish in the sea.
Yeah.
It felt like, okay, God, I'm listening.
Got your attention.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. For sure. Uh-huh. All right, good question. All right, anybody else with questions for them? Okay, for that one. Here we go for number two.
Where in West Virginia?
What?
Where in West Virginia?
West Virginia.
Okay, number two. Here we go. What were the advantages and challenges you faced while serving in the military?
I'll start this one off. So we were kind of talking to you last night. I think the big one was it helps us understand each other, right? The kind of common experiences, the common language of the service, even just like the organization of units, right? And so for me, for the one that lost and was going to take a rough decision to kind of get out, start having kids, but I knew that when I had challengers or when work stuff was, you know, good or bad or whatever, I could use the acronyms. I could use kind of that common language. And she understood. She knew exactly what I was talking about, both in and out, when she was in and out. And that, I think that really helped give us the foundation for some communication. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to worry about, like, I don't have to explain what I do. I don't have to talk about the facts, right? I can get to those deeper levels of communication. Mm-hmm. Simply because we start from a very deeper level.
And she would understand those acronyms.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And the stresses of, you know, deployments or getting ready or coming back or whatever. She understood all that. That we lived through it together. There were a lot of high stress environments, right? We talked about deployments, but also working at the Pentagon, right? Those kind of jobs with, like, I just need to focus on this for a year and it's going to be like I'm deployed, but we'll be okay,
right? We did actually, in 2019, when we left here, we joked that he was deployed because he would leave the house at 4 something in the morning. He'd eat breakfast there and work out at the gym at the Pentagon, and he wouldn't get home usually until 7:30 or 8 at night. And time to kiss the kids, eat some stuff, you know, scarf down some dinner, kiss the kids, and go to sleep. Like, it was a very, it was a strange season. But it was what was needed, not even for his job. Yeah.
But there were lots of advantages. The financial one we wrote down, you know, is, you know, both spouses are working, there's financial advantage to having both spouses work. So that was certainly there. There's afforded to travel. We enjoyed moving around. Generally speaking, we enjoyed moving around.
Mm-hmm.
I was still in Europe for 3 years. So there were opportunities that we had, good and bad, that were afforded to us.
Well, you mentioned Iraq, but where in Europe did you get to?
We lived in Germany for 3 years.
Wow.
Then in southern Germany, Bavaria, which was phenomenal.
Oh.
And I think we kind of talk about some of the deliberate decision-making discussion. That was one of the result of one of the factors.
Uh-huh. All right. And advantage was Germany getting to live in Europe. All right. Number three. Yes, ma'am. Your question for number two.
We didn't have this load, but there were a couple of situations where we couldn't, and that was hard because I had had a clearance. We had been able to freely talk about a lot of things going on. There is this one silly instance. I remember him talking about, like, there was a death in Iraq of a friend, and we couldn't talk about that openly over communications, but we had a little code way of saying it. Well, it's Bill's job in George's unit. And I was like, oh, okay. So we found ways early on that we could talk about things, and that was really hard later in the Pentagon and in his job in Germany that we couldn't. And so there were things, especially, he was in a command position in Europe when the Ukraine war was kicking off that involved a lot of decisions that I just didn't know about, or a lot of things that he didn't talk about. And so, typically, you would just try to explain, like, I'm under a lot of stress because of current events, and you'll find out about it. But the other sweet thing, he always sent me news articles when things popped up, and he's like, this is what I've been working on. This has finally hit the news, and now we can discuss it. Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciated that there have been multiple times when he sent me news articles. I was like, oh, that clears up so much in my brain to know, like, this is what's been weighing on you, and I can't be a part of that. But typically, it was just always like, I don't know. I think that's the biggest thing. Is like when it got open, then he could share things, and that helped me feel better. But in general, he would just try to share things about what he could, about, you know, hey, these are the things going on with people in my work, and, you know, how you can help, or what's easy, what's hard, what's weighing on me. Honestly, one of the big ones, he came to me during a really hard season, like, hey, I need you to say something about this. This is really, I just really need your prayer about this heavy issue going on in my unit. And having that sort of thing, like knowing, like, okay, I'm a part of your work in this way. And I may not know all the details, I may not be privy to all that, but I can be in prayer over this particular thing.
And while it may not be the, you know, the classified groups, right? There are ways to have those discussions. Hey, it's having a challenge with this person, right, at work. I've talked about that, but that's what I need to help with. So that help us kind of bridge some of the gaps and then we'll talk about the
yes. Good question. Okay.
I would also say I just came out of a job where Christian did have zero idea like what we were working on in there. Because it was that classified. And, but you know, like they were saying, you talk about the people in there, or you talk about their roles in there, the project managers and you know that I'm struggling with trying to get the project managers to understand, you know, this, or we're working on, you know, this type of general problem, or whatever, and we're able to have those kind of conversations so that we can, you know, relate to, you know, any struggles that other
happen. That's really
interesting.
And I say, you know,
so that gives you some ideas.
From a wife's perspective, I remember taking the role, because one of the like sometimes it was, can I like do the share in the car? And he's like, I need my dad. And I was like, can I bring you dinner bags for the summer bags? You can help me bring those pieces. Yes, it's when the military has different colors. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I would be, I'm dropping off both because I don't know even what climate you're going to. And one of the times I took Addison and I said that to my family, and people at first were like, well, where is he? And I'm like, I don't know. And they're like, oh, you know, you know. Mm-hmm. No, I truly don't know. And honestly, when they asked that and they realized what a relief it was, that I was not trying to keep track what I was asking and mm-hmm. what I wasn't asking. And I realized that he was saving me that stuff because of the rules. You know, which was probably from my, you know, standpoint, my sanity, that it was a relief. It was a relief not to go that way.
Mm-hmm.
And he was
I also really liked what everyone has said, that what you guys talked about with asking for prayer, I think that is huge because so much of the time when we don't know what our husbands are doing, what our wives are doing, just to be able to ask for prayer and to hear yourself pray over you
mm-hmm.
is amazing and beautiful, and that also something that really does give that vulnerability deep into those levels of communication. You can hear yourself pray over you. Even if you don't really know, you know it's just, or you know what they're doing is really important. And that they're doing something for our nation and for our world. I feel like that's a huge thing that we can always pray for our spouses in those rooms. That really does dig deep and provide that
mm-hmm. opened up some doors to a lot of conversation mm-hmm. amongst yourselves. Absolutely. Which goes right into question number 3. How did you remain mm-hmm. close to God?
So, this is what I'd say, we we did what we knew to do, which was go to church. Even though we did, that was like the baseline for us. We always have found with a great congregation. Sometimes it took longer. Actually, not always a great congregation. We always found a place to worship. And tried to make that a priority, even when it didn't feel easy, even when we had different training schedules, or like there were months where he was away at school for different things, when I was in Hippo Den. But making church a priority was really a good thing. Even there was this little church in Taji, Iraq. So Taji is one of the big bases in Iraq where I was first stationed in the second deployment. And there was a little Church of Christ group that met. And you know, one of us would always go and snag a few little containers of saltine crackers and a bottle of, you know, little grape juice box. And we would go, and one of us would be in charge of filling our little tiny cups the chaplains provide. And you know, like sitting there with our, like, I had my M16 at my feet while singing, you know, as our 11, a group of 11 people were, you know, putting together our worship, or some days would be absolutely flooded trying to get through to that little building we were using. One day you picked me up in a 5-ton. That was fun. I don't know where you got that, but literally, like, doing the hat, making those things. but making those habits a priority was really, I think, a good thing. It just made it so that we knew, like, okay, if this Sunday we're going to be here. A couple places there weren't church, they didn't have this opportunity. Like, my second deployment, his third, we didn't have that opportunity. My parents would send us, with audio CDs of our preacher back home. I'd listen to when I could. Mm-hmm. The other one is, like, we tried to surround ourselves with people who were like-minded. I had a really great chaplain friend when we were going through some tough stuff, my first deployment, who just pointed me to some great resources. And Brandon, we always had some great battle buddies and friends. Brandon really pointed out at the Pentagon that he's like, God constantly is surrounding you with people with faith. What a blessing. That's not always the case in the military. Like, I didn't see that as much on my side. But he realized at one point, like, man, I just keep, like, there are so many people of faith around me, and that is so encouraging. So, keeping that up would help.
And that comes from keeping your eyes open, right? Mm-hmm. And it didn't just start there, right? It started kind of prior to that. I was sitting in a dining facility in Afghanistan, a base that wasn't my base. I was out somewhere else. And, you know, kind of take a few minutes and you bow your head before your meal, but looking around and seeing who else is doing that, right? Just such a little thing, right? Somebody sitting over kind of by themselves, like, okay, we've got something in common. I don't know your faith background. I don't know what you're praying for. Mm-hmm. You're getting your glasses or something, right? But, like, there's a chance, like, we've got something in common. You are praying to, you know, a higher being, right? Mm-hmm. And so that, when you start to notice it, that I am not alone, right? I'm not by myself. Actually, during that particular deployment, I became the minister, the preacher to this small group of people. It was kind of like a Moses and Aaron kind of moment. They're like, this is good. Last time I did my work, scissors, that didn't work out. Okay, let's go. Right, so it was just seeking those opportunities, or sometimes they find you.
Yeah.
Just to be able to make people close to you. Someone you don't even know, by having a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Or just into something like that.
Right. Okay. Questions for them about the question of, well, how did you remain close to God? Anything about what they said about that? Okay. Number 4. What were the hats you wore while in the military, and what was changing hats like for you?
Yeah, so a lot of various jobs, right, that fall kind of under one umbrella, but The way I thought about this was different times in our life when the situation changed. Mm-hmm. Right? So we started out not married. I was deployed. She was still in college. Then we got married. We were both deployed at the same time to the same location with the shared kind of experiences. And then eventually,
I should note, like, we didn't spend loads of time together. We had dinner together, but we didn't have to get separate housing and stuff. So, like, it was a weird year. But we got to keep going at least. It was nice. That was nice.
When I was back, yeah, I spent a lot of time out. during that time. And then, if she got out, we had kids.
Well, yeah, there are a couple of deployments like that.
Yeah,
we had a couple of deployments.
Yeah, a couple of deployments where we were, actually two, where we were both deployed at the same time, generally the same location. Then she got out, we had kids, I deployed two more times after that. And so, like, there's a lot of variety in there, right? From being a, you know, one deployed, not married couple to one deployment with kids. And so those were very different phases, I think, and it just was like the back in the U.S. or overseas kind of environment that has those jobs. So, various phases.
Teaching has, it was really hard for me getting out of the Army. I put a lot of, I still struggle with this significantly. Put a lot of my identity in what I do. So leaving the Army was hard because, like, what now? Like, I'm used to hanging out with, I found myself thrust into, like, Bible studies with women, wives. I was like, I'm not used to being with them. I'm used to being with the soldiers. It felt very strange. And even now, it's still a little hard for me to not put my identity into what I'm doing or what I'm involved with and put it in Christ. That's something I'm still working on. And then there's also the sense of belonging. It's hard getting out of the Army in the sense, like, we had the tightest bonds with our military family, and I still gravitate for people who get that. And so that's been an interesting changing it has for us. It's like, okay, we're stable now. It's also delightful. It's also nice to see who's planted and, like, have leadership and, like, not be just jumping around from one thing. Most of our last few, with the exception of Germany, most of our last few assignments were only 1 or 2 years, sometimes as low as 10 months.
Wow.
So we're used to a lot of change, and so that's an interesting one. It's a lot of change for us.
Okay. Questions for them? Okay. The next one. How did your past military service prepare you for the challenges you face today?
We had a joke about gratitude. There was this one time we were leaving for our R&R from Iraq, and I had the worst migraine of my life, and we didn't have time. Our flight had been delayed. We didn't have time to go back to the sleeping tent. So we just hung out in the airfield there on Liberty, and we slept in our duffel bags. So worst migraine, sleeping in duffel bags, loads of noise, loads of people. And we joke sometimes, like, well, this is bad, but at least we're not sleeping in our duffel bags. So there's a sense of gratitude. There's a sense of gratitude. There's a sense of achievement. There's a sense of, like, okay, this is frustrating, but really perspective is in place for sure because of our experiences.
And just knowing, like, as bad as it may be at the time, we've been through worse. We've been through worse together. So saddle up and just
keep going.
Keep going.
Uh-huh.
Okay. One of the ones that is probably one of the most challenging for me personally was not actually all of the deployments. In between my third and fourth, I came out of a command position as a captain, and instead of going to what would have been my fourth, the commander selected me to be the rear detachment commander, so the person that doesn't go. So the unit deployed to Afghanistan, and my former company, my former lieutenant and NCO were killed during the deployment. So there was a bit of survivor's guilt, if you want to call it that. But more importantly, I was now back here helping those families grieve, right? I was the one who went in to visit the family immediately after the medication officer with Laura by my side, right? And so we had to experience that together, and so, you know, kind of overcoming that grief and loss.
You've got a lot of grief.
Was another one of those kind of things you look back on, like, we've been through things worse. But the communication then is, how do you process all that in the background? That just, you can talk about, hey, that was tough. But
yes, absolutely.
We knew this thing.
And we've been through a lot together. Okay.